Since 1938, there's been a rule that no one can transmit election results to a province whose polls haven't been closed. The regulation is no doubt outdated and doesn't take into account our new world of Twitter and Facebook, and that's why local social media gurus have created tweettheresults.ca, a website dedicated to aggregating people posting early results to Twitter. Alexandra Samuel is creator of tweettheresults.ca and director of Social and Interactive Media Center at Emily Carr University. Alexandra Samuel, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
How involved have you been in the election generally with Twitter?
Well, you know, I think like a lot of people who spend their time online, Twitter is my go-to place for talking about the latest election news. As it happens, with the news that we would be limited in our ability to tweet on election night itself, that has kind of become my own personal focus for the election, but I certainly talk about other issues as they arise.
How are you being thwarted or are you facing some kind of regulation?
Well, you know, the question for us really is what to do at 4 o'clock today, because until then, everything we've done is completely legal, which is to, you know, just track a conversation that's unfolding on Twitter.
Yep.
And all we're doing, as you noted, is to aggregate the tweets that are already being posted on Twitter with the hashtag #TweetTheResults, and that's how people are tagging their tweets in order to participate in this conversation. And that's all fine and dandy until 4. But as of 4 o'clock tonight, it will, you know, potentially become illegal, and we'll be in, you know, really nebulous legal territory.
And so what do you expect to happen? Is there any way for the authorities, whoever they are, to be able to monitor what you're doing or what other people are doing? And even if they can monitor it, is there any way to enforce what tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people might be doing?
Well, Elections Canada has already indicated that its response to these kinds of violations has always been driven by complaints rather than proactive investigations. So if nobody complains, then there's no reason to expect that Elections Canada will take action. The question is, will there be people who complain about folks who have tweeted or posted results on Facebook? And, you know, I think that the odds are, frankly, pretty good that somebody will complain. We've had a few people blog about the site or tweet about the site or tweet about the phenomenon of people tweeting in a way that is quite critical. And I totally respect their reasons for criticizing the participation. So, you know, will any of those folks file a complaint? Who knows?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago, somebody tried to take, just because of the internet, this is before Facebook and Twitter, but because of the internet and the accessibility to results in other parts of the country, they actually took it to court, and the courts withheld what I think is a dinosaur of regulation.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. And ultimately, you know, there was a fine of only $1,000, which isn't a life-destroying sum. But I mean, the reality is that the threat isn't just the threat of a fine, right? The threat is, do you want to spend years of your life in litigation with Elections Canada? And, you know, I honestly can't imagine how in this day and age we want to live in a democracy where our citizens have to think twice before participating in a political conversation using a medium that they use every day, right?
But it just occurred to me. I mean, I said a couple of weeks ago, you don't need a radio anymore to listen to the radio. I listen to CKNW most of the time now when I'm away from the station on my app, on my iPhone. Mm-hmm. Well, I can listen to a Toronto radio station on my app. I can listen to a Newfoundland radio station on an app. So anybody with an iPhone can be listening to an election broadcast in another part of the country before the polls close in British Columbia.
Well, you know, you raise a really interesting question, and I've myself wondered how they're going to handle that. I mean, in principle, it may be that those TV stations and radio stations that do normally stream their content live onto the web may in fact take it offline to play it safe tonight. And again, you know, I think it's just another example of how problematic that law has become in an era where it's not, you know, we're not asking a handful of news outlets to sit on some information for a couple of hours. We're asking, you know, at this point, literally thousands or hundreds of thousands of people to change their behavior.
at the same time that we're trying to encourage more and more of them to vote.
Exactly. And I think, to me, that's the greatest irony. I mean, Canadians are now used to having online conversations in real time when there's a game on. I mean, my goodness, look at what happened to the Canucks hashtag during any of those playoff games. You know, we're on chatting about our favorite reality TV shows. We're on chatting during our awards shows. We're on last night chatting when you get this, you know, major news story about Osama bin Laden. And then we're supposed to disengage when it comes to talking about our own election. And to me, that just feels tragic. I mean, this is the conversation we should be encouraging people to participate in, not one we should be shutting down.
How much attention have you been paying to how Twitter is being used? I heard the term flash mobs a few minutes ago. Is it going to be used to drive the vote? Or will it? I guess we won't know until later tonight whether it's been effective or not, but surely there are going to be candidates and parties who are trying to drive people in great numbers to the polls by using Twitter.
Absolutely. And, you know, there have been some terrific examples of that. There's a project called Vote Social, votesocial.ca, that has been making use of social media as a way of spreading the word to just get out and vote. This is an important election, and it's an opportunity for people to have a voice. And one of the things that's actually really, really lovely about Twitter today is if you go online and you look at the hashtag that people are using for the election, which is, you know, #ELXN41, you'll see people tweeting as they vote, as they think about voting, as they make their decision how to vote. I tweeted as I was leaving the polling station this morning, and it's a beautiful moment. You're getting a mirror on democracy and all of its complexity and humor, and it's a profound experience for people, and I think we experience and appreciate it more because of Twitter.
I think there's a real generational difference in terms of what privacy means. And I'm suspecting that that people of your age, and I don't know exactly how old you are, but I'm just assuming you're quite a bit younger than me, that they'll be inclined to go out and Twitter about who they voted for.
Yeah, I think that's very likely.
Or tweet about who they voted
absolutely.
For.
Absolutely, and I've seen people do that already. I'm no spring chicken. I turned 40 this week. So I'm on the other side of the generational line as far as this behavior is concerned. But I think the reality is that, you know, online interaction, social media now transcends generations. And I have friends who are in their 60s and 70s who use Twitter to participate in politics, to
sure.
connect with their friends. And I have teenagers who I correspond with.
But I'm wondering if the younger people are less inclined to want to be private or secretive about who they vote for.
That'll be an interesting question. Yeah. I mean, they're less secretive about everything from, you know, getting drunk at a party last night to what they thought about the person who just interviewed them for a job. So there's no reason to think that they'll be secretive about their vote.
Let me open the phones. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this. And have you been to the polling station already? Have you been tweeting about it? Do you use Twitter? Have you been following any of the candidates on Twitter? 604-280-9898. Facebook, has that been a big part of your following this campaign? I'm talking with Alexandra Samuel, creator of tweettheresults.ca, director of Social and Interactive Media Center at Emily Carr University. You're with Bill Good on the Chorus Radio Network, and my phones, yes, we still use phones, are open to you, 604-280-9898. Toll free, 1-877-399-9898. Call now. Talking with Alexandra Samuel, creator of tweettheresults.ca, director of Social and Interactive Media Center at the Emily Carr University, and I welcome your calls to her. Ron, good morning.
Yeah, hello, Bill.
Hi.
I went out and voted first thing this morning since the polling station opened on my way to my first job. And this is every election we go through the same thing. There's always somebody who wants to get the results from back east to out here before our polling stations are closed. And for the life of me, what I really can't understand, why doesn't Elections Canada just refuse to release the results until the last polling station is closed? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Well, it might to you. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand for a minute why I can't watch the results as they come in across the country.
But why do we need to see it immediately? I mean, why can't we?
Why not?
The next day? Why do you need to know right away?
I like to know
why
things
do you
right
need
away.
To know before. I mean, you're a news person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you like to know, but really, you don't need to know until the counting's done.
Alexandra, how do you respond to that?
I mean, I'm very sympathetic to what Ron is saying, and frankly to what you're saying as well, Bill. I mean, I think there's good reason to think in terms of all Canadians getting the news at the same time. I don't buy the idea that it affects voting results. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that's the case. But, you know, as somebody who lives out west, you know, I do feel that sense of being cut off from the federal government at times. It's a long way to Ottawa. And if disclosing election results across the country is a way of helping us feel more included in the national scene, then so be it. But at the same time,
But it never does, because what always happens is as soon as the polls close here, Peter Mansbridge or Lloyd Robertson comes on and says, you know, CTV or CBC or Global has projected a da-da-da-da-da, whatever.
Sure. Well, all the more reason that maybe the ballot boxes don't get opened until the polls have closed. I mean, there's two choices, right? Elections Canada could decide to sync all of the poll closings. That's probably hard to do. But they could also choose to literally not open the ballot boxes. So the counting begins at the same time across the country. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll have to send some extra strong coffee out to the poor folks in Newfoundland. but, you know, the reality is that we do live in now sort of one time zone socially. I am online all the time with people who are in Toronto, who are in Europe for that matter. And the idea that we can't have a conversation as a country in a moment when that's now possible seems really unfortunate.
Trevor, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I was just saying, I was following you guys actually on my iPad app as well. Like you, Bill, I listen to the station on the iPad.
Yeah.
And I mean, what I found profoundly interesting this runaround is the impact that it's had leading up to the election. So as much as it's great for us to talk about, you know, well, you know, is it going to impact, you know, if I know that in Ontario, you know, the NDP are surging their orange surge. But what I've seen on Facebook right now is a lot of my friends change their profile pics to, you know, to the orange, to, you know, support the NDP, to support their party. So to your point you made a few minutes ago, I already know who a lot of my friends are voting for, right?
Yeah.
Has that impacted my vote?
You
know what? I've thought twice about my vote this time, I have to admit. I mean, I'm normally a Liberal supporter, and you know, I have gone to vote. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I voted NDP this time. So it has actually helped sway me in leading up to the election. I think that's where we're seeing the true power of social media.
Very interesting. Now, why did you change your vote?
You know, it probably started after the federal, or the French election. I started to sort of pick up
the French debate.
You know, pick up the paper a bit more, get more informed about what everybody's offering. And in my opinion, I like the idea of a coalition government. I really do. I think it's going to be good for us in the long run.
Okay, thanks, Trevor. Nicholas.
Hi. I don't know exactly where most people stand on this, but personally, I think the reason why they prevent publishing of election results in places where the polls haven't closed is to encourage people to vote regardless of what the outcome is. Because by the time the election gets to BC, you know, a lot of times it's been completely decided already. So now in an era of social media, yeah, it's great to be able to talk to everybody, but maybe we should be looking at it from a point of view, well, if the election's already decided, why should I vote in D.C.? Maybe we should prevent the publishing of any election results at all until the next morning.
But your riding hasn't been determined, and isn't that a large part of why you vote, to elect somebody in your riding?
Yes, however, that's the way it works in theory in the system, but in reality, if a majority government's been elected in Quebec and Ontario, and I know that voting for whichever candidate in my riding isn't going to affect the legislation that goes forward in this next sitting of Parliament, I mean, why would I vote?
Well, the research is quite clear that there is, in fact, no impact, particularly now that the voting times have been staggered, so the only thing we could know potentially is what happens in Atlantic Canada. And Atlantic Canada mm-hmm. is such a thin slice of the electorate that it isn't enough to influence people out west.
That's right, because as you say, the polling has been staggered across the country. We used to vote till 8 o'clock. The polls close now at 7 o'clock. They close earlier in eastern Canada.
That's right. They close in Newfoundland. The polls will be closed as of 4 o'clock our time, but in Ontario, the polls are closing much later, so there's actually only going to be a half-hour gap between when the polls close in Ontario and when they close here. Probably not enough time to have that Peter Mansbridge effect that you were just alluding to. I don't think they'll be in a position to make any real forecast by the time the polls close here.
Ted, hi.
Yeah, hi. I've already voted, and when I voted, I felt that I was casting 156 proxy ballots for 156 Canadians who died to prevent some fanatic from imposing his government on me at the point of a gun. And if Twitter can get people out to do the same thing, just remember, you're voting on behalf of 156 Canadians who paid the ultimate price.
How busy was the polling station?
It was steady.
Good to hear. Thanks, Ted. Bhupinder.
In my opinion, they shouldn't disclose the results until all the polling are closed all across Canada. And in my opinion, it definitely impacts, you know, the results on the east have an impact on the west. However, you know, overall, what I was going to say, the technology changes very fast. It's very hard to keep up with the technology. There's always a curious mind. I want to know what is happening east and what is happening all over the world. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you. Wayne, good morning.
Yeah, hi. You were talking about your ability to get an app and to pick up a radio station in Toronto, Bill, but you don't have to be even anywhere near as sophisticated as that. There are thousands of people in this market who are capable of time shifting with their television.
Oh, I know.
And like CBLT Toronto, the CBC station, it will be airing the results of the Toronto audience at the close of the polls over there, and people will be able to time shift and pick up CBLT Toronto out of this market.
Well, will the cable company or the satellite company allow that to happen?
I don't think anybody's been told that they'll be stopped from doing that at this point in time. I haven't heard anybody being told that.
No, I must confess it's the first time I thought about it, but you make a very valid point. Alexander, great talking to you. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you so much, Phil.
We break for the news headlines, and then we're going to talk a little hockey.
Tennessee. Lord, ladies and gentlemen, the incredible Carrie Underwood.
Life on the farm is pretty simple. Whenever my dad needs help in the mornings, I'll get up real early and help him go feed the cows or put out hay.
What you gonna do?
To be except.
What you gonna sing when the song ends?
Vancouver is right back in.
How you gonna cope when there is no closure? Where you gonna reach when the goal gets higher? How you gonna make
Rapierre, 3-on-1?
When you think you lost your chance, play on. When you're losing the game, play on.
Higgins scores!
Getting ready for Game 3 tomorrow night after a stressful first round against the Chicago Blackhawks. How are the Canucks going to fare with Carrie Underwood and the Preds, not to mention Mike Fisher? Will there be any surprises? Was Saturday night's game a surprise? Dirk Hogue is managing editor on the forecheck, Nashville Predators news and analysis. J.J. Guerrero is a blogger with CanucksHockeyBlog.com. They have a friendly competition going. They both join us now. Let me start with Dirk Hogue. How much excitement is there in Tennessee for hockey this week?
Oh, it's incredible. First of all, thanks for having me. It's great to talk with you folks. But, yeah, the town's a buzz right now. There are watch parties all over the city Saturday night to catch Game 2. And, obviously, you know, down here people were just going nuts when Matt Halichuk scored that double overtime winner, I think. It was a huge surprise to see, you know, a fourth-line role player like that come up with the big goal. But that's kind of the way these Predators have rolled. It's a different guy every night.
J.J. Guerrero, were you surprised? I don't know if you saw the report here, but the reception that the Predators got at the airport when they got back to Nashville?
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you know, Nashville's had a pretty good team. They don't play the most entertaining style of hockey, I don't think. Personally, I don't think anyway. But you know what? They've got a good team, and, you know, being – having gone through the first round, or getting past the first round for the first time in franchise history, that's got to be pretty exciting for them.
But, Dirk, there's an impression here that, there was talk about moving the Predators a few years ago. There's just been an impression, I think, north of the border that Nashville's not a hotbed of hockey.
Well, I think what you've got here is there's a strong core, a hardcore fan base that actually professional hockey's been in Nashville for about 40 years now. And what the struggle has been expanding beyond that to bring in the marginal sports fan. Obviously, football is number one in this country. But ever since the franchise changed hands in 2007 with the local ownership coming on board, they've made a lot of progress on that front. And the one thing I've always maintained is what you really need to grab people and get them on the bandwagon is some of that playoff success. And we're finally getting a bit of taste of that this season.
And are you noticing an uptick on your blog?
Oh, absolutely. Last month was the biggest we've had in traffic in the 5 years that I've been running the site. It was about 50% higher than any previous month we'd ever had.
And, JJ, I would assume that yours is active all the time.
Yeah, it's pretty active. We've got a bunch of new writers this year, and they've been doing a pretty good job of keeping up with content and that sort of thing. But, you know, everyone's crazy about Canucks hockey, right, especially the playoffs and, them having completed the best regular season in franchise history. Everyone in Vancouver, actually everyone in the province, is pretty excited. So, and, you know, like I noticed on Twitter, too, I mean, a lot of people from around the country, even from, you know, other cities, are jumping on the bandwagon, and we'll gladly welcome them.
Well, how has blogging and Twitter and Facebook changed the way people follow hockey? Dirk, can you speak to that?
Well, again, I think it provides that opportunity to reach out to folks. I'm fortunate enough to have a pretty broad reach here in Nashville, and when I'm able to get something out that may be exciting that folks want to read about, they tend to share it with their friends. And that social media aspect really allows you to reach that second and third layer of extra folks out there that otherwise you just wouldn't have access to.
JJ?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, having that information, getting that information right away and being able to share with it right away, and that's huge, right? The biggest change I find is knowing what the readers or knowing what the audience feels basically as soon as you've posted something, because they'll either retweet your post or they'll add a comment to it and share it with their friends and that sort of stuff. So, I mean, in terms of having that conversation going, I mean, it's not confined to just the blog itself. You're looking at sharing your feedback, sharing your comments, how you feel about the game or any particular aspect of the game instantaneously over, say, Twitter or Facebook or that sort of stuff.
Now, I understand you two have a little bit of a side bit going here.
We do, yeah. it's kind of a fun little bet, and I actually got the idea from Richard Loth, who's a partner at Canucks Hockey Blog, and he does 5-hole for food as well. And the idea was to do the bet, and instead of us benefiting from it, having the local charities benefit from it. So if the Canucks win the series, then Dirk's kindly donating $50 to Canuck Place, and if the Predators win the series...
Then oh, don't even say that.
Then I'm donating to Predators Foundation. I think it's a good way, and everything benefits. My first thought, honestly, was, you know, to have a nickel back for Carrie Underwood swap, but I wasn't sure if Dirk was going to go for that.
I don't know if Dirk's seen this, but I thought one of the highlights of Game 1 was someone had a big Carrie Underwood poster in the stands at the Rogers Arena with her wearing a Canuck jersey.
Yeah, was that the Green Man down by the penalty box? Getting on Tutu when he was in there, I think.
how do people react to the Green Man in Nashville?
Actually, I think they have a lot of respect for it because the fans are pretty crazy here in Nashville, and we got our first glimpse of the Green Man last season. There was a late-night game up there in Vancouver, and the veteran Dave Scatchard made a couple trips to the penalty box. And for those of us diehards who were up past midnight watching that game, we had to rub our eyes to make sure we hadn't fallen asleep. I was like, what the heck is going on up there? But I think people appreciate that kind of energy because I think that's one of the things that fans take pride in here at Nashville. It's a really unique, energetic atmosphere in this arena, and it's all driven from the fans.
Well, speaking of diehard, and you talk about, I'm assuming that now, especially in an atmosphere like this, hockey fans are 24-hour-a-day bloggers and Facebook followers and participants and be tweeting hockey virtually all the time.
That's right. The conversation is always going on. People are asking, you know, they're curious about the latest updates, who's skating at practice, who's, you know, being talked about maybe getting into the lineup. And it's great because here in Nashville...
Who's at the Roxy or not?
Exactly. the Predators are open to working with us bloggers, so we're able to get that kind of information and pass it along to folks.
How cooperative are the Canucks, JJ?
We've actually got a really good relationship with the Canucks. We deal with their social media department quite a bit, so we help organize their tweet-ups and some of their social media initiatives. They're fairly open. I mean, definitely it's a big change from, you know, 5 years ago when we first started the blog. But they've got their own social media department now, and, you know, all of us at Canucks Hockey Blog, we're fortunate to actually have a really good relationship with them.
Talking with Dirk Hogue and J.J. Guerrero, bloggers in Nashville and here in Vancouver. A few more minutes with them. If you'd like to jump in, if you've participated on their blogs, or if you participate in any blogs, or if you're using social media to follow the series between the Canucks and the Predators, love to hear from you. 604-280-9898, toll free, 1-877-399-9898. You're with Bill Good on the Chorus Radio Network. Talking with a couple of hockey bloggers, Dirk Hogue is managing editor on the Forecheck, Nashville Predators News and Analysis. J.J. Guerrero, a blogger with CanucksHockeyBlog.com. The series between Nashville and Vancouver tied at one. A double overtime win by Nashville on Saturday night shocked Vancouver and I suspect the whole province. J.J. Guerrero, what is the mood? What are you hearing from the people who are active in your blog?
I think, generally speaking, people are still optimistic about the series. I mean, it's one loss, and, you know, we can't sweep every series. We can't sweep, or at least expect to sweep a series, especially against a team like Nashville, who's just so good defensively, and they've got, you know, Pekarinen playing out of his mind back there. So,
yeah.
But, you know, they've created a lot of chances. They just haven't been able to bury it. I think if they keep doing what they're doing and keep throwing shots at Rene and creating some traffic in front of them, then they'll be okay.
So there's not despair in the land?
Sorry?
There's not despair in the land?
Not so much. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit of there's a little bit there, but I think generally speaking, everyone's still optimistic.
There's anxiety about the Sedins.
Yeah, I mean they've got to step it up a little bit. I think they've combined for something like 3 points over the last six games, and Henrik has one assist over the last six games. So again, you know, they had chances in game two. They definitely had chances in game one, but yeah, they've got to finish it off.
Dirk Hogue, do your fans tend to be bandwagon jumpers, or are they pretty consistent?
Oh, they're pretty darn consistent, and I think right now they're just encouraged to see Pekarinen playing as well as he is. They actually got through the first round when he really wasn't at his best, and the way these games have been, tight, low-scoring affairs, that's more the kind of hockey that we're used to watching here in Nashville.
And JJ, what we're quickly appreciating, if we didn't already know it, is the top eight in the West are all very good hockey teams.
Yeah, they're all really good hockey teams. I mean, you can't take anything away from a team like Nashville. And you know what? Going into the series, you know, a lot of fans were thinking, oh, yeah, we finally got Nashville. You know, they don't score a lot, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the fact is, Nashville has been one of the highest-scoring teams since the trade deadline. And, you know, maybe Dirk can speak more to this, but, you know, you look at their lineup, and you don't think they'd be averaging more than 3 goals a game. But, you know, since March 1st, that's what they've done.
Yeah, I think the major factor there is they've finally gotten some healthy players back in the lineup. They were really crippled, especially at the center position. There were times where three of the four opening night centers were out of the lineup for a couple weeks at a time. And so now they've finally got a relatively healthy lineup together. They're able to roll three lines. And if they're able to get any contribution from the power play, then that only adds to the results.
Well, acquiring Mike Fisher certainly was an asset, too.
It was. And again, I think their plan right from the start was to try to roll three lines against most other teams' top two lines. And until they got Mike Fisher, they really didn't have enough depth there. They were hoping it was going to be provided by Matthew Lombardi, but he went down with a concussion in the second game of the season. So he's really been a wonderful addition to the lineup.
Gentlemen, it's been great talking to both of you. Appreciate it. And like everybody, I think, in this province, we anxiously await game three.
Great.
Thank you for having me.
Dirk Hogue, managing editor on the Forecheck, Nashville Predators News and Analysis, and J.J. Guerrero, blogger with Canucks Hockey Blog. com. Jessica Hyatt produces this program, and she'll be in just a little bit with what you've been telling us by way of email this morning. Jessica Hyatt and Karen Horak produce this program. Emails busy this morning?
Very busy today. Well, people.
Let me guess.
I know. There's a few things, but people are talking about Bin Laden's death, and some of our listeners are relieved, but others are questioning his death even happened at all. So this first email is from Bozena, and she says, "Should it not be a journalistic duty to be skeptical and analytical about the government, what the government is telling people? Is it not very strange that the Americans got rid of Osama bin Laden's body in such a hurry and so on? Why are some people celebrating something they in reality know nothing about?"
So that's I think it is reasonable to be skeptical. I was actually shocked this morning because, I mean, I watched the coverage from the president last night
and
the lead up to it. So I knew that they were announcing that he was dead, and I didn't doubt that he was dead. They said they have DNA, and I assume they're going to have to demonstrate it in some tangible fashion. But when I heard Philip say this morning that his body had been disposed of at sea, my first reaction was, what?
I know.
You know,
it was really
why
quick.
Would you do that? At the same time, and I think I said this to a caller this morning,
mm-hmm.
They wouldn't dare tell us he was dead. And
if
then
they didn't
have him,
know 100%.
Have him turn up. You know, that would destroy President Obama faster than anything I could think of. His credibility would be gone, destroyed. There are still people who don't think they landed a man on the moon, although we did see that one on television. I'm waiting to see if there are photographs, if
so
there
what,
are pictures, if the military has photographs to be able to at least demonstrate, here he is.
Mm-hmm. For all
dead.
Those people. But what should they have done with his body then?
That's a very good question.
I don't know. What would you do with it? I don't know.
The prime minister. What country wanted him?
He
didn't have citizenship anywhere, apparently. I don't know. But I know that I did. My first thought after they did what was, oh, my goodness, this is going to feed the blogosphere for
firestorm.
Years. Yeah.
Well, this second email is from Mike, and he says, "It is amazing how large numbers of people in this society have come to doubt the obvious. The rat is dead, yes, dead, and dumped into the sea to sleep with the fish. For people to suggest he should have received a get-out-of-jail-free card and left alone is absolutely nothing less than ignorant. Bin Laden was the chief visionary and CEO of banking for the terrorism network, which now threatens all of our daily lives to some degree. To have him gone, I agree, is only one rat removed from the nest, but he was the king rat."
I was thinking about him on my way to California when I was getting frisked
at the airport.
No uncertain terms. At actually the Bellingham airport.
Wow,
I flew to Bellingham this time, and one of the bonuses, parking, $9.
It's a way better deal.
Not an hour, a day. $9 a day, 24
Wouldn't
hours.
Wouldn't that be nice at the Vancouver airport?
What else we got?
Okay, well, this one is from Kim, and she's responding to your interview with Maureen. Her son died in Afghanistan in 2006, and Kim says, "Your guest whose son was killed in Afghanistan made a significant point in expressing the hope that the people of that region could someday live in freedom and without fear. What better memorial for her son and all his colleagues than to exercise the right to cast a secret ballot for the candidate of their choice today?"
Mm-hmm.
So that's from Kim, basically reminding all of us to vote and why it's so important that we all get out and vote.
For whomever
you
choose to vote for.
And Mark says, on that note, "I've also been getting lots of emails from people who are upset about Stephen Harper's message at the very end of his conversation with you this morning. And it was very brief. But I mean, the main talking points, we were talking all about Osama bin Laden.
The reason the prime minister was on.
Exactly.
You don't stop covering the news on election day. You don't carry political ads. That's the regulation. I'm not sure what the prime minister said would constitute an ad, but I was still surprised that he was that blatant, I must confess. But I hadn't expected it, and it wasn't the purpose of him being on the program. The purpose was to talk about, as we did for about 7 or 8 minutes, about the death of Osama bin Laden and how he got the news and what he thought of the news and what it meant to this country's policy.
Well, Mark says, "In normal times, it may be well appropriate to ask Mr. Harper for a comment on the passing of a scumbag like bin Laden. However, this is election day, and Harper just ended the interview with a plug for his own party. Unbelievable."
Well, do you think he changed anybody's vote?
I don't think so.
There you go.
Okay, well,
is that
tonight,
it?
Yes, that's
okay.
It for us. But we'll be back tonight.
We will, 6:30, right here.
for
with
our
full
own
coverage.
Election coverage. So we'll be weighing in. We'll be talking to analysts from the different parties, and we'll have reporters basically in all of the swing ridings, and they'll be filling us in on the latest, especially as the results
are out.
And
if I could do a little commercial here. I've done television for many years, and it's always really frustrating in a federal election because the network takes most of the time, and they keep taking away the time they've promised you do local results. There'll be none of that here. This will be British Columbia election from beginning to end, from 6:30 till about 10 o'clock tonight. You'll find out all you want to know, need to know about your riding.
Perfect. That's a perfect plug. And tomorrow, of course, we'll be covering the outcome of the federal election. Global National Jacques Barbeau will join us from Ottawa to give us the buzz and a lot more as well.
I'm Bill Good. Thank you for listening today on the Chorus Radio Network. Please stay tuned for the major news to noon next. Then Mike Smith, 12:35 till 3.